deciding what today's theme was going to be for Laity Sunday, I thought it would be nice if I didn't have to write a sermon. So I came up with this clever idea of finding out where other people see God in our family, as we are all one family under this roof. And so I cornered four different people, talked them into sharing their words with us. And Catherine?
Hi. God's love is here. From the first time I walked through the front doors in September many years ago, I felt this church was different. That first worship service, I was not looked at, but I was invited in to sit with. January of 85 is when I began here as organist, and through the course of the years, have seen many changes. Changes in pastoral leadership and in the physical building. Individuals and families growing, moving in, moving out, coming back. Births, deaths, joys, tragedies. This congregation, with all of the morphing changes, is far more than a place or a group. It is family, and I am one of the crazy aunts. God's love is shared here. Over 35 years, I have many strong memories, specific examples of church family members living God's love here. And it would be easy to share those stories, but I'm going to describe you instead. And I hope you will recognize yourself and each other in this list. There is the greeter and the seater, the bulletin hander outer, the offering plate passer, the written word sharer, the pastor's away worship leader, the missions giver, the gentle handshaker, the hearty hugger, the twinkly-eyed smiler, the kid wrangler, the music harmonizer, and the baby snatcher. That's June, by the way. God's love works here. Whether in the building or out in the community, there's the swinger of hammer, the paint brusher, the wrencher of lug nuts and plumbing parts, the techno wizard, wood stacker, leaf raker, hot meal maker, yard sale organizer, craft creator. Downstairs, there's the fruit slicer, potato peeler, biscuit chef, hash slinger, dishwasher, coffee dripper, service with a smiler, cracker stacker, and sweet treat maker. God's love is not always seen. There's the building and congregation historian, data entry maven, attendance head counter, greeting card sender, tissue box passer, pillow puffer, stuffed critter hugger, toddler entertainer, quiet hand holder, and there's the prayer. Without a doubt, God's love lives here.
Share with you because Liz is downstairs and bringing everybody to cover for her. So she asked if I would read this to you, and this is Liz's story. My butt has ridden a lot of pews for the years. The first half of my life was spent trying to find a connection and a grace in a large Roman Catholic church where I was baptized and raised. Built in the Gothic style, it was a physically beautiful church with soaring arches and a impressive altar, with a golden tabernacle and stunning pastel tableau of biblical scenes in every section, including the ceiling. The Stations of the Cross were painted in half scale all around the pews. Ornately carved wooden confessionals stood in the back in a marble font filled with holy water graced the entrance. Jesus hung crucified high above the altar, and a statue of Mary stood off to the right, near where my parents and I usually sat. When I wasn't watching the technicolor rainbow of lights from the stained glass windows slanting across the backs of the folks in the next pew, I was staring at Mary's sweet face. Her serenity fascinated me even more so as I grew older and understood the importance of all she had gone through. I learned a lot from our fellow parishioners at St. Bridget's. I learned that an hour in church and the host in your belly, but don't you, apparently excused you from any further obligation to God or man during the week. I learned that so-called fellowship, which occurred once a month in the school's cafeteria, meant taking care not to be trampled by the grown-ups who wanted to get in and get the good donuts before they were gone and they were all out. I learned that Catholics were pious in the pews, but downright homicidal trying to exit the parking lot and lying to their wives. I learned that the question of faith was not particularly welcome, and I was expected to simply swallow the doctrine and march on. Children were seen and not heard in our church, and if any baby or toddler had the audacity to make a fuss, the family was subjected to irritated stares from the clergy and its pewmate until one of the parents scooped up the offending child and disappeared into the bottom of the church. There was no levity allowed in church, either, a rule I unknowingly broke at the age of 3 when they rang the altar bells during communion and I hollered, "Telephone!" causing my mother to laugh until she cried. The year the bishop came to rally the troops, he lamented that too many Catholics were coming to Mass only when they were hatched, matched, and dispatched. You'd have read this ahead of time, I guess. The entire church erupted into laughter, and I knew we were doomed. I also learned that the Roman Catholic Church was the one true church created by Jesus himself, and all other religions were getting it wrong. I worried endlessly about the faith of the non-Catholics in my life, like my favorite Jewish neighbor who used to invite me over for homemade bagels, my gay friend and his atheist parents, and my Episcopalian Nana, who, unbeknownst to me, was suffering from a migraine the day of my first communion. The poor woman made it through the painfully long service, took communion, and fell over the front steps of the church as we were leaving. Even though Father Andrew had told me it was okay for her to participate because of her Episcopalian baptism, I was convinced that God was angry and punishing her because she was a Catholic. I yearned for a sense of belonging but never felt more alone than when I was sitting with the other 200 folks who attended Mass on a typical Sunday. I took solace in reciting the ancient prayers that connected me to generations of my ancestors and to the sometimes vengeful, sometimes doting God I had heard about in Bible stories. After being confirmed, I began to explore other denominations to see if I could find a better fit, but never quite found what I was seeking and defaulted back to Catholicism. Then the death started, 113 over the course of 20 years. Family and friends, felled by old age, lingering diseases, freak accidents, and even a murder. All my grandparents, all but 4 aunts and uncles, and finally my parents vanished from my life along with so many others. No church ladies came with offerings of food and companionship. No prayers were said unless we called the church office to make a donation and get a memorial mass said. Angry at God, broken and bereft, but at the same time awed at the faith-affirming things I witnessed as I walked with the suffering and held the hands of the loved ones passing into the next life. I had David baptized at St. Francis Xavier because I didn't know where else to go, then abandoned the Catholic Church entirely, and began pursuing a more spiritual but not religious lifestyle. As David approached 4, I realized I needed to find a new faith community, and soon I wanted him to know the comforting God that I had met in those long ago dark nights by my dying mother's bedside. The one that made my friend Rick's faith stronger and stronger even as the cancer ravaged his body. The loving father that my cousin Caitlin still believed in as her church told her it was an unforgivable sin to want to marry the woman she loved. Bella, at the time, attending second grade at Christ the King, was beginning to explore her own spirituality and was being bombarded with the same narrow-minded, exclusionary messages that I had received while growing up. We needed a better option. My grandmother always told me that God would provide, and one day he did. I should have read this ahead, I could tell. I first encountered Leif and Elliot playing at the park, and subsequently met Alyssa, who also knew my cousin Krista. A year later, another chance meeting with Alyssa and Emily led them to invite me to check out their little Methodist church in Essex. I looked it up online first, and one phrase stood out. Essex Center United Methodist Church is less a place than it is people. People who don't claim to have all the answers, but want to engage in the questions faithfully together. I listened to the podcast of the most recent sermon. The pastor was witty and passionate, reading in Hebrew and Greek and essays from other faiths, talking about the radical love of Jesus for all of God's beloved children. Definitely worth investigating. The following Sunday, I packed David into the car for the short drive to Essex, and from the moment we arrived, it was clear this joint was different than anything else I'd ever experienced. We were greeted at the front door with a friendly smile and a handshake, and another at the top of the stairs along with the bulletin. As we made our way to the unoccupied pew up front, I noticed that unlike my Catholic brethren, these folks were not sitting quietly staring at the altar and shushing their kids. They were casually dressed, several holding coffee cups, or walking around talking animatedly to each other. The next thing I knew, they were descending on our pew in a steady stream to welcome us. I don't think I've ever shaken so many hands as I did that morning, and that was well before packing the piece. Mid-service, as my heart was opening to another rousing sermon by the fabulous long-haired hippie pastor, David was enjoying playtime with his peers in the nursery, a clipboard was passed to me, looking for volunteers for a community supper. Service to my fellow man. I found myself signing up without a second thought. Fellowship afterward was actually fellowship. People lingered, they chatted, they laughed for more than half an hour. I gravitated to the kitchen and found myself with a dish towel in my hand and a light heart, surrounded by laughing women who included me in their banter, as naturally as we'd known each other for years. Driving home, I wondered if it were possible to have found a single morning the place I'd been seeking all my life, right when we needed it the most. The answer came when David piped up from the back seat, breaking into my reverie. I really like that church, Mommy. Can we go again next week and take Sissy and Auntie Kay with us? I want to pass the peace again. The rest, as they say, is history. I can't express enough the gratitude for the unabashed love this congregation has shown our little family, excuse me, and the grace you've extended as we have struggled with our faith and life's challenges in the past year. I can only hope you're feeling it from us in return. As we walk this journey of faith together. And it says a thank you to Don for volunteering to read this for me. She might not want that. Because I could have gotten through it without crying. I'm going to live. Anyway, it's beautiful enough for this story. And now Mark, who actually, I think Mitch twisted Mark's arm for me.
That's a hard one to beat. We moved here, Lori and myself, this last June from Mississippi to be near our two boys. We've been visiting here a number of years and shopped around a bit at different churches. We visited this church about a year and a half ago, and we were warmly welcomed by a number of folks. When away, we would listen to the podcast of the sermon. Moving to a new city, it's easy to be isolated and alone, but this place has been a great way to connect with caring people. This is a following list of some things we've liked: the welcoming, the hugs, small groups to study books and plan for outreach. People seem to care. They welcomed our son. Mitch is available through a number of venues, study groups, the Nest office hours, heard in church events going on that we were interested in. Well-informed preaching and dialogue, and we have the bonus of actually having two well-educated ministers here. Outreach to the community, missions. I like it that there's casual or dress up. There's an inclusive presentation. Not afraid to discuss the Bible in a frank way. Seems like a number of people help out to make the church a living witness. Good music, good to see young folks, and a stress on building relationships. This is a quintessential New England church building, old and traditional, with electronic updates for the service. And I love the hole in the floor over there where for bricks in the pews. My father started as a bricklayer, so I know something about brickwork, but we are still figuring out how we're gonna get the bricks to and from our car in January and February. We look forward to getting to know people here better and growing in service and friendship. Thank you.
Thank you for joining us. And last, but by no means least, Ms. Narda.
So there are everyone who's spoken has a bit of what I'm saying in what they said. And I also want to say that I put this together, basically it's a list, throughout the week while I was in between doing a dozen other chores, and I didn't read it in its entirety till this morning. So I know now I had to have the Kleenex. And I also realized as I saw people come in this morning that there were a lot more things I could have added to this list. So, and this is mostly things that I'm going to talk about that are from the past, because I know these things are still occurring today and that every one of you could make a similar list. So first thing I want to start with, put your hands together like this. Put your thumbs flat against the front. Put your two pointer fingers up together. Repeat with me. This is the church.
This is the steeple. Open the door and see all the people.
So I think most of us learned that when we were little kids, and it really is. The church isn't the building, it's the people inside. And it's the family. The congregation makes up our family. John Wesley, when he created the Methodist Church, said, do no harm, do all the good you can do, and worship together with others. And he believed very strongly that by worshiping together, we supported each other, we built relationships, we became a family of God that we could help, that would help us strengthen our faith, and we could take out into the community. And I really think that's what we have here. I joined this congregation when I was about 9 or 10. My parents were unhappy with where we were attending church. I kind of liked the church. I went to Sunday school. I learned, here's the church, here is the steeple. I learned to sing all the hymns. I had just gotten a Bible. I learned all about how good God was. But it was coming in through these doors where I learned what that looked like in action. I still remember my first Sunday, going down to Sunday school and automatically feeling accepted and being signed up to go to Camp Missisquoi right away, the church camp. And I felt love and accepted. The active demonstration of love and support has made this congregation my family throughout the last 45, 46 years. And I'm going to list some of those ways. All the youth group leaders that took us on retreats to Camp Missisquoi, putting up with the shenanigans of overly dramatic middle school youth. Betty Tucker, who taught our Sunday school class and patiently brokered peace deals between the emotional girls when we argued. Gus and Gerda Stegner, who visited our family the year we lived in Germany, bringing a bit of our church family to us. Reverend Johnson, who came and visited the first week we returned from Germany, just to invite my brother Andrew and I back to Sunday school and youth group. Wes and Ruth Bristol and Grant Corson giving up a week of their time to travel with the youth group to the Redbird Mission in Kentucky, putting up with our dismal lack of painting skills and hammering skills, and the whining that went on, as well as the stench of pig pee, because we couldn't resist holding the baby pigs. Yeah, time really, you know, softens all memories. The pieces of gum that Helen Sampson used to hand out after every service. Every Easter breakfast and every chicken and biscuit supper that Gil Myers presided over. The Donna Holmes, Kathy Albertson, Vicky Kazaza, Patty Mitchell, and all the others welcoming me into the UMW as I transitioned into being an adult, including me in the craft afternoons, secret pals, the bazaar and giving me so much wonderful advice as I prepared for motherhood. Cedric Marshall always making sure that the sand and candles were ready for the Christmas Eve luminaries before I even asked. A baby shower thrown by the youth and their parents in 1988. The time taken to write a personal letter to me by Maureen Wigner that is still tucked in my Bible. Gerda Stegner remembering my love of German pretzels and bringing them to every rockathon ever held in this church. My babies disappearing from my arms and being passed around the congregation as they were showered with love and cuddles. The many healing prayers said for me when I had cancer, including Andy Hatton praying with me on my porch. All the meals that were made for our family throughout the years, and I still remember the comfort of coming home from the hospital one day to find a warm casserole and freshly made bread made by the Call family waiting for me. All the kids' nights out that Judy Wright led were wonderful sources of fellowships and crafts for my children. Every time I found a hand-drawn card by Betty Tucker in my mailbox. Those who donated to every youth group event and mission trip that during the time I led youth group or that my boys were involved, as well as all those adults who volunteered and led. All the people who visited my dad while he was at Star Farm, including those who played the endless hands of cribbage with him. Al Rogers mentoring Jeremy's interest in audio and visual arts. Every dessert made for MYF auctions and dessert evenings. Bible study being held at Mansfield Place when Virginia and my mom moved to the assisted living facility. The baskets of holiday cheer that the women have prepared for way longer than I can remember and delivered to Christmas to those who can't get out as easily. All those who gave rides to my mom and others who can't drive. All the walks and trips for creamies that Kathy Dodge took my mom out for. The way Dawn reaches out to bring out the best in all of us through her prayers and her quiet questions and listening. And the moments that we've all experienced, communion being offered to everyone within these walls, including the children, no restrictions on age or faith. I mean, what's a few crumbs among friends? The candlelight services where the glow of God's love always shines in everyone's face. And the music in this church on every single Sunday. I've gone to a lot of churches over the last few years. But there is never, the music in this church transcends everything. Catherine's duets with June's, the choirs that have existed over the years, Roger's organ playing, Barb's drumming, and everyone else who has shared their talents, filling the sanctuary with joyous noise of praise. These are the moments that make us family. These are the moments where God shares his love, makes us stronger, so that we can take our Christian love outside of the church.